Hello, I'm Toby Fox from 1.5 million New Homes, the local government challenge sponsored by Redloft and Waites. We're investigating the role of local councils in the government's national ambition to deliver 1.5 million new homes. In this episode, I'm talking to Caroline Harper, who's the Deputy Managing Director of BeFirst, the council's wholly owned development company, about what makes Barking and Dagenham so special. So, Caroline, here we are in the historic heart of Barking. Tell us what's so special about the London Borough of Barking and Dagenham.
Well, I think in terms of delivery of development, it's the scale of opportunity that is enormous. There is a lot of industrial land here that is not utilised as best it should be. Mm-hmm. So, might not be occupied, underutilised, used for unlawful uses, particularly in terms of waste. But then also we've got, from that, the scale of land that can really deliver housing, again, I keep saying scale, but at scale, in a way that I think is pretty unique to London. Possibly Old Oak Common is the only other real contender.
So it's tens of thousands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that it's important for lots of reasons. You know, there's a tendency, we can focus on the shiny things that London has to offer, mm-hmm. which are important and make London a global city. But in order for those shiny things to operate, we've also got to have the places that are kind of the engine behind it.
Yeah.
And Barking and Dagenham really offers that. So it's, you know, this is an area where we've delivered lots of affordable housing, but there's also the kind of, yes, you've got the social rent side of things, but also there's a huge spectrum, isn't there, between social housing and then right to the top, let's say penthouse development. And the values here are such that you can deliver for those people who are part of aspirational working Londoners is one of the ways that we use it.
Yeah.
And that's important for London continuing to function as a whole, as well as for local residents that are here.
And what are the demographics of the people who are already here, actually here?
Well, it's a borough that is undergoing really significant change. So if you mm-hmm. look at the census from 2011 and then compare it to the census of 2021, mm-hmm. huge amounts of change. It's very diverse. Lots are a big Muslim population, mm-hmm. but also lots of people from Romania and places mm-hmm. like that. So that brings with it a real kind of cultural mix, mm-hmm. Positives and also some tensions, as you'd expect. It's a very young borough. So actually bucks national trends. So again, looking at that comparison between 2011 and 2021, the working age population has grown by about 20%. Wow. Whereas for England, I think it's about 3.5%, 3.6%, something like that.
Yeah.
And we've got a contracting kind of over 65 population. So really interesting in terms of that dynamics and what does that mean for employment and jobs. And we're very keen not to be just an anchor for homes because there are real economic opportunities here as well. So kind of anchoring that place. I think that kind of sums it up really.
And how does that all translate into housing need? What is the housing need in Barking and Dagenham?
Yeah, I think, and it depends on the scale that you look at it. So, you know, there is a big need for and a big political push of BeFirst delivery to date on the council mm-hmm. sites. It's been very much about affordable housing and how does that work? How does that work through in terms of delivery? So making sure that it's affordable for local residents. It's one of the reasons it's one of the reasons that the council has a relatively small temporary accommodation budget mm-hmm. Spend. And then also it's really sort of still got a housing waiting list, but it's helped to manage that.
Yeah.
But then there's also the kind of London need, if you like.
Yeah.
So we have to factor that in, and we're very keen, particularly in the kind of BeFirst phase two, of how do we build on our legacy to date to help improve land values across mm-hmm. the borough, and with that having mixed communities. So, mm-hmm. you know, at the moment, this is probably the most affordable borough in London. And that has its pros and cons, but we don't want to be the most affordable borough, and therefore this is, you know, a concentration of people who are quite poor, who don't have lots of money.
Can't afford to live somewhere else.
That is not sustainable.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't help with actually getting things viable and so on and so forth. So we need to bring forward a mix. So housing needs to. It's got, you know. It's got to deliver on housing needs here, but it's also got to deliver on housing needs for London with the express of bringing forward those mixed communities, because that's how you get sustainability of place, etc.
And this is all about housing. We're not really talking about jobs. You're talking about creating housing for people who work elsewhere to look after the rest of London. But there are economic drivers here as well. What are the main kind of economic drivers?
Absolutely. There's huge amounts of opportunity. So the borough is, I think, the only place in the UK where we've got two existing railheads which have cross-channel train connectivity. And Legal & General own a site around Box Lane, and they are working on bringing forward a new rail freight terminal there. Mm-hmm. We're expecting that to be operational kind of later in the 20s. So, you know, that's happening. One of our jobs, and we're working with partners like the Thames Estuary Growth Board, is how do we harness the regeneration benefits from that, given that Box Lane is right next to, we call it Castle Green, which is a big strategic industrial area, not utilised as you would expect for a 21st century London. So how do we bring in the logistics, the industrial floor space that is fitting for London in the 21st century, and with it the kind of quality jobs that meet needs of people living here but also elsewhere in London, and help with that kind of London's function as a global city. And then we've also got, because we've got so much industrial land, there are other quite significant pockets of that again need redeveloping. And there are, you know, we have Thames Freeport that's where the Ford, Thames Freeport covers the Ford's site. They produce diesel engines there at the moment. So, you know, that's going to stop at some point. So I know that they're looking
because diesel engines are being banned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So if you go on that site ever, I mean, it's incredible. It's enormous, absolutely enormous. And it's how does Thames Freeport and Ford utilise the kind of benefits that come in with being a freeport to anchor again industrial... And when I say industrial, it's not the kind of gritty industrial of the past. Yeah. It's like, what does London
smelting
need?
Smelting furnaces and clanging hammers.
It's not that. But it's what actually do we need, again, to be functioning as a city? And what does that mean for employment numbers here?
And that's really interesting here, particularly because... Yeah. Barking and Dagenham used to be synonymous with Ford. You mentioned Ford, the motor car manufacturer. I mean, they were built here. There were thousands and thousands and thousands of people employed building cars. That's pretty much all stopped apart from diesel engines.
So the Thames Freeport it covers several boroughs. So covers the Ford site in Barking and Dagenham, then stretches a little bit into Havering, and then over to Thurrock with Tilbury Ports. And they've got a remit to bring in, I think it's about £4.5 billion worth of additional investment. So, no mean task.
It's huge.
Yeah, absolutely enormous. And I mentioned Box Lane earlier as one of the railheads that has cross-channel connectivity. The other railhead is on Ford site.
Right.
Neither of these at the moment are utilised in any real capacity. And again, that offers, it's how this works with the port, etc. But it offers real potential benefits in terms of our supply chains and how we move things around, the challenges that we have getting things across the channel currently, and then what does that mean for motorways, the kind of road to rail, you know, this is on the river, there's safeguarded wharfs, you know, there's real scope here for looking ahead in terms of, you know, the short, medium and long term, what does this mean for how we get things into London and then get things out of London, and then the connectivity to the Midlands, up to Scotland, etc. So that kind of import export side of things.
So back to brass tacks, we need to talk about housing. That's what we're here for. We talked a bit about how you've got a very small temporary accommodation list, so not huge amounts of housing need in that sense, but still a need to produce lots of houses. What are the targets and how have they changed?
So in terms of the kind of type of homes that we deliver here, I think there's a difference between the council's own sites, which a lot of those are estate renewal. So that drives, you know, how do those sites come forward? And to date, we haven't cross-subsidised with private sale, partly because the private sale market here is relatively constrained. Mm-hmm. The rental market is almost bottomless.
Yeah. And that's about viability, land value and desirability for private sale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that, you know, that impacts the type of, I guess, the kind of housing product that comes through. Yeah. Looking ahead, so for where the council has land, so where the council has the greatest control of what kind of housing can come forward, I think there will be a real, real thought given to what is affordable, and is it affordability? So we see this already coming out with the GLA in terms of a little bit of flex, okay, their proposals around key worker rental product and so on. Yep. I think as a sector, we need to look at how do we actually really get things going again. You know, things have incredibly, massively slowed down, mm-hmm, if, you know, in terms of construction, and there's a real danger if we don't have sensible conversations about, well, actually, what is affordability rather than the current kind of policy definitions of affordable, then nothing will happen and we'll still be having these conversations going forward.
So is this about saying that what we used to call affordable is no longer affordable?
I don't know if it's quite as black and white as that, but I think it's more there, you know, there's lots of talk about, well, we need to look at things flexibly, and, you know, we need to still make things happen. I guess my concern is it's not tweaking around the edges. It's actually sometimes we need to look at slightly different, more fundamental changes if we are to deliver it. So I'll give you an example. On Thames Road, which is one of our big transformation areas, yeah, and then 3,500 homes alongside industrial, etc. One of the conversations that we've been having is, well, actually, could we put, could we structure a deal with a third party where we go in at a certain level of affordability, but it's done on a basis that actually in time, potentially, that rent could be reduced because of the returns on it. And, we're still talking this through and how this could work.
Yeah.
But actually, that could unlock it because it will free up other sites along Thames Road to come forward for, you know, build to rent and help with the viability.
Yeah.
And I, you know, though we are part of those conversations. We're talking to the London Housing Fund guys about this. And that is happening. But I don't... I'd say the conversations are happening, but we're not at the point there that it's kind of in policy
it's
in terms
real.
Of how it's coming.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's just an idea.
Exactly.
But that is revolutionary.
Yeah.
Because you're starting about rent. You're talking about rent starting at a high level and then getting lower over time because you've paid for the building.
Yeah.
Like, naturally, rents go up, not down.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. You know, there's no... This is a work in progress rather than a commitment. And it might be that actually, you know, the returns on a building are better put into developing another site and coming forward. But you need to have those kind of conversations and work it through. And keeping in mind, you know, the public sector can't drive all of this. We're all in a world where there is limited public purse, council, GLA, central government. So therefore, we need to make things attractive to that private sector investment, and I that is potentially attractive to them. So
Is it fair to say that the targets set by the London Mayor that come out of the targets that are set by government for building new homes on an annual basis are irrelevant here because you always over deliver, or have you got targets which you're striving to reach?
No, we do. I mean, we have policy targets in the local plan, and then I think our housing on the new figures that have come out, Barking and Dagenham's housing targets by that metric have actually decreased as a target, which is nuts. It's actually nuts.
And that's just because it's a new way of measuring it, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's also the approach that's taken, and there's, you know, I know that the GLA is looking at it in terms of actually let's look at this across all of London rather than necessarily what's been attributed to specific boroughs. And that's important because, like I keep saying, there is a lot of opportunity here. So Kensington and Chelsea, where are they going to put 5,000 homes?
Yeah.
We can easily accommodate 5,000 homes subject to overcoming other barriers.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I can see why housing targets are important, but fundamentally we are a pro-growth borough and we want homes that people can live in. So we need to deliver on that. So that's not going away.
So that wraps up another episode of 1.5 Million New Homes, the Local Government Challenge, sponsored by Redloft and Waite. We're going to be back in a few days with another episode, and we look forward to seeing you then. In the meantime, if you like what you've seen, please do click like or subscribe. It really helps us. Thank you very much for watching.